Right now, in 2026, there are businesses out there that are just spending millions of dollars on these massive enterprise AI deployments.
Oh, yeah. Millions.
Right. And it's actively making their customer experience slower, like less reliable, and ultimately it's just driving their buyers away.
It's completely backfiring on them.
Exactly. They're purchasing all this massive processing power, plugging it directly into their systems, and then they're just watching their conversion rates plummet.
Because they skipped the most basic foundational steps of integration.
Exactly. So welcome to today's deep dive. We are thrilled to have you with us today. Our mission here is to basically hand you the practical blueprint for navigating this incredibly chaotic world of AI integration.
And it is chaotic out there right now.
It really is. So we are going to cut through all that vendor hype, right? Yeah. We want to make sure that any technology investment you actually make delivers measurable business outcomes.
Right, rather than just, you know, introducing this cascade of completely unmanaged risks into your daily operations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So our source material for this, it's actually this really cool insider document. It's an SEO content plan and buyer's guide.
Yeah, it's titled How to Choose an AI Consulting Partner in 2026, Orange County Buyer's Guide.
Right. And it's published by a company called Technigen.
Which is such a fascinating lens to view the current market through, honestly.
Yeah. How so?
Well, I mean, we aren't just looking at some generic technology textbook, right?
Yeah.
Or some dry academic paper.
Right, right.
We are analyzing the exact blueprint that a service provider actually uses to explain this whole volatile landscape to, like, executives and department leaders.
Oh, wow. That makes sense.
Yeah. It forces leaders to stop treating AI adoption as just this, you know, this race to buy the newest shiny algorithm.
Like it's just a toy or something.
Exactly. It demands that they treat it as a heavily scrutinized, really measurable business decision.
Okay. Let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because I want to make sure they don't treat this like a dry technology lecture either.
Good call.
For you listening, this is really a survival guide. I mean, we are operating in this highly competitive market where your customers expect instant, absolutely flawless answers.
They want completely reliable digital systems, right, or they're just gone.
Right. The margin for error is essentially zero at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with the actual friction point here.
Okay.
The tools are literally everywhere, right? I mean, they are embedded in almost every software suite you can buy today.
Oh, yeah. You can't avoid them.
So if access to the tech isn't the problem, why are businesses still struggling so profoundly to actually use them effectively?
Well, the source actually identifies this primary risk very clearly.
Yeah.
The danger really stems from these AI vendors who are out there selling flashy, you know, completely synthetic demos.
Oh, I've seen those.
Right. But they do it without ever establishing a workflow baseline for the client.
So they just come in totally blind.
Exactly. They bypass governance. They skip the security reviews entirely.
Wait, they skip security reviews?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All the time. And they operate with zero implementation accountability.
Wow.
So a vendor comes in with this demo that just runs flawlessly, right? Because it's running on perfectly sanitized data in this nice, safe, closed environment.
Of course, it works in the lab.
Right. But the exact moment that tool is dropped into the chaotic, messy reality of a company's live data streams,
it just completely breaks down.
The whole system just breaks down.
You know, it's like buying an AI demo without a workflow baseline is like buying a Formula One engine for your commuter car.
Oh, I like that.
Right. But you do it without checking if the brakes or the transmission can even handle the torque.
It's just going to cause a spectacular crash.
Exactly. You have all this raw computational power, but absolutely no control over where the car actually goes.
And the fallout from that lack of control, it hits the employees first.
Yeah, that makes sense.
When a new system breaks workflows instead of, you know, actually enhancing them, employees experience this massive friction.
They just get frustrated.
Right. And they inevitably just revert to their old manual processes just to get their daily jobs done.
Which totally defeats the purpose of the whole multi-million dollar investment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So then leadership is left with all this uncertainty because they have no idea why the investment isn't showing up in the quarterly reports.
Right.
But most critically, it's a customer on the other end of the transaction who experiences the brunt of it.
Because they're the ones dealing with the laggy responses.
Yes. Laggy responses, totally inconsistent information, this whole disjointed digital experience.
And unclear trust signals, which is huge online.
Exactly. Customers in 2026, they just do not have the patience for a company's internal tech growing pains.
No. They will simply click away and take their business elsewhere.
Yep.
Which means, for the listener, we have to figure out how to prevent that engine from tearing the car apart in the first place.
We do.
And the guide is incredibly strict about the cure here. It states that the absolute first step any leader must take is to document their current state.
Yes. The baseline.
Right. You have to look inward and establish a baseline before you build anything new.
Or before you even agree to take a meeting with an outside vendor.
Right. Right.
What's fascinating here is that a missing baseline isn't just some minor administrative oversight.
Like someone just forgot to fill out a form.
Exactly. It's much bigger than that. The document warns that it is a glaring indicator that the business is flying completely blind.
Wow.
If you don't have documented governance and baselines, your business is likely just relying on human memory and manual effort.
Which doesn't scale at all.
No. You're basically depending on the fact that an employee named Sarah knows exactly how to route a specific type of customer complaint.
Right. And if Sarah quits, the whole process breaks.
Exactly. You need to know who actually owns the workflow, which specific software systems are currently involved, which internal teams or, you know, external customers are affected by it, and how the business currently measures success for that specific task.
Okay. So if you are listening to this right now and thinking, look, my company's workflow is already a tangled disaster. There's no way I can baseline it. You are definitely not alone.
Oh, absolutely not. It's so common.
But I have to ask on behalf of the listener here, if an operations workflow is already a total mess,
yeah,
isn't the whole point of bringing in an AI consultant to actually fix that mess?
You think so, right?
Like, how detailed does this baseline really need to be? Because what happens when a vendor tells you, hey, don't worry about mapping your current state. Our tool is just going to overwrite all of that anyway.
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, a vendor claiming they can just overwrite your mess without understanding it, that is a massive red flag.
Really?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
The baseline doesn't need to be this flawless, perfectly optimized schematic of your business.
Okay, that's a relief.
Right. It simply needs to exist as a stake in the ground.
Yeah.
Because tools do not overwrite underlying business logic.
They just speed it up.
Exactly. If a one-time fix from a consultant is implemented without a documented starting point, you have absolutely no way to measure reality.
You don't know where you started.
Right. Staff members leave, vendors get swapped out, new tools are constantly being introduced.
Oh, sure. It's a revolving door.
So if performance suddenly drops 6 months from now, and you never mapped the original baseline,
you won't know whose fault it is.
Exactly. You won't know if the AI broke or if, like, a core CRM system was updated by IT and disrupted the data flow. You need that baseline just to prove if the AI actually delivered a real improvement.
Okay, so once that stake is in the ground and a business actually knows what broken system they are trying to fix, they need a strategy to actually roll it out.
They do.
And the guide provides a very specific three-phase implementation roadmap to basically keep teams from trying to overhaul their entire corporate infrastructure over a single weekend.
Which happens way too often. So phase one is designed entirely around keeping the scope narrow but critical.
Narrow but critical.
The guide really emphasizes evaluating strategy, data readiness, security.
It's huge.
Pilot design, integration skill, and measurable ROI. But for a highly specific problem.
So don't try to boil the ocean.
Exactly. For example, rather than trying to automate your entire customer service department all at once,
right,
you target just the level one support tickets for product returns. That's it.
That makes a lot of sense.
You evaluate if your data is even clean enough for an AI to read it and if your security protocols actually allow an AI to safely access customer purchase histories.
Right, because you don't want an AI accidentally leaking credit card info.
Exactly. And the output of this phase must be a documented improvement.
Okay.
It cannot just be a planning meeting or, you know, a theoretical slide deck.
Right. And then phase two is where the measurement layer is actually added.
Yes.
This is where you define exactly what will be tracked, how often it will be reviewed. And this is key. Who has to respond if the metrics suddenly tanks?
Accountability.
Exactly. And the guide makes a massive distinction here between measuring outcomes versus measuring activity.
Such an important distinction.
Because measuring activity is a trap.
It totally is.
It looks like a team saying, hey, we published a new AI policy page, or look, we procured 50 enterprise licenses for this shiny new tool.
Which means nothing for the bottom line.
Right. Measuring activity instead of outcomes is basically like bragging about buying expensive gym clothes.
Oh, definitely.
Instead of actually lifting weights. It doesn't prove success. It just proves you spent money.
That analogy perfectly captures the corporate tech trap. A genuine outcome in 2026 means looking at hard, undeniable data.
Real numbers.
Right. Did we reduce the mean time to resolution by 14 seconds? Did we increase the conversion rate on the checkout page?
Are there fewer support tickets actually being escalated to the human agents?
Exactly. Have we achieved cleaner, more accurate operational reporting? You can have the most sophisticated neural network available on the market, but if you aren't tracking its direct impact on those physical, measurable results,
you aren't actually improving the business.
You're just playing with tech.
Right. So then we hit phase three, which is standardizing ownership.
Crucial step.
Because once that AI improvement is actually live and functioning out there in the wild, someone has to own the maintenance.
Somebody's got to feed it and water it.
Right. Someone has to own the reporting, coordinate with the vendor for updates, and handle all the future patches.
Yeah. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this three-phase approach, starting narrow, measuring real outcomes, and standardizing ownership, that is exactly how a business turns a flashy buzzword like AI implementation into an actual managed business capability.
It transforms it from a chaotic science experiment into a repeatable operating habit.
Beautifully said.
But, you know, roadmaps and operating habits require internal alignment.
And capital.
A beautifully designed three-phase plan will just sit on a shelf forever if the internal team fighting over it has completely different definitions of what success even looks like.
It happens all the time.
Right. So this shifts the complexity from what to do to who actually controls the project and how do we fund it.
The internal politics.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The guide suggests this very deliberate two-person ownership model to navigate this exact internal power dynamic.
Yes.
You need one business owner.
Yes.
And one technical or marketing owner.
Right. Because you need both perspectives.
I understand the need for a business owner who cares about margins and a technical owner who cares about, you know, latency and uptime.
Sure.
But practically speaking, how do you prevent the technical owner from just steamrolling the business owner with jargon?
Oh, the classic tech steamroll.
I've seen that happen 100 times. The technical team starts throwing around terms like vector embeddings and API rate limits.
And the business owner's eyes just glaze over.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They just back away and let the tech team build whatever they want, and they completely lose the connection to revenue entirely.
Well, the guide prevents that by strictly defining their jurisdictions right up front.
Okay. How?
The business owner's sole responsibility is defining the why.
The why.
Okay. Right. Why does this implementation matter to the company's bottom line? What specific customer experience are we actively trying to protect here?
That makes sense. Keep them focused on the business value.
Exactly. And then the technical owner is responsible for defining the how, the practical, nitty-gritty steps to get it done securely.
Okay, so they have their lanes.
Right. And when those two owners actually sit down to negotiate the budget, the framework advises them to separate urgent fixes from maturity improvements.
Man, what's the difference there?
So urgent fixes are immediate threats. Threats to security, uptime, compliance, or those core conversions we talked about.
Things that are bleeding money right now.
Exactly. Maturity improvements are the secondary goals, the things that make the system stronger over time.
Like advanced reporting dashboards.
Right, or deeper automation. Nice to have, but not the houses on fire urgent.
Okay. So what does this all mean when they actually take this entire plan to the CFO?
Ah, the moment of truth.
Right. Because the source talks heavily about this concept, the cost of inaction.
Yes, it does.
Which is a pretty aggressive way to frame a budget request.
It's very direct.
So what actually happens if a business in 2026 just decides, you know what, let's leave this AI integration issue unresolved for another quarter?
Just kick the can down the road.
Yeah. Are they really doomed, or are they just making a wise decision to avoid the messy, expensive early adopter tax?
Well, you really have to view inaction through the lens of the specific competitive environment.
No.
Like Orange County, for instance, which the guide specifically highlights.
Right. Highly competitive market.
In these high-stakes markets, customers have incredibly high expectations for digital interactions.
You want it yesterday.
Exactly. So if you choose to wait quietly, you aren't simply pausing your own business.
You're falling behind.
You are actively bleeding customer trust. Weak execution, or just no execution at all, means your competitors who have optimized their workflows.
They're gonna eat your lunch.
Exactly. They will answer customer queries faster, they'll provide more accurate pricing on the spot, and offer a vastly superior digital experience.
Wow.
So utilizing the cost of an action framework, it translates these abstract technology delays into tangible, real-world business losses.
It's a dollar sign on waiting.
Exactly. It forces leadership to objectively answer. What level of operational efficiency or market visibility are we actually willing to lose this quarter by not funding this project?
It is about what you are actively choosing to lose by doing nothing.
Yes.
That is a very sobering reality check.
It really is.
So, assuming the internal house is in order, the two owners have negotiated their scope, and the budget is approved based on that cost of inaction.
Now the real fun begins.
Right. Now we reach the critical stage of actually hiring the AI consulting partner and holding them accountable.
And this, where the vast majority of implementations just completely fall apart.
Really? Why?
Because businesses often hire an expensive consultant and just kind of assume the vendor inherently understands their corporate culture and operational tempo.
Like, we paid you a lot of money, just figure it out.
Exactly. But the guide argues that expectations must be relentlessly clear from day one.
No ambiguity.
None. You have to define the exact deliverables, the required response times, and the access boundaries.
Access boundaries, like what they can touch.
Yes, explicitly detailing which legacy systems the vendor can and absolutely cannot touch.
Oh, that's smart. Keep them out of the payroll system if they don't need to be there.
Exactly. You also must map out the escalation steps for when, not if, but when something goes wrong during the deployment.
Because something will always go wrong.
Always.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because my absolute favorite part of this entire document is the demand for plain language reporting.
Oh, yes. This is crucial.
The guide explicitly states that leadership should not need a computer science degree to decode a vendor's technical notes, just to know if the project was successful.
It shouldn't be a mystery.
Right. The reports have to connect the implementation details directly back to the business outcomes.
Right, in English.
Yes. Instead of a vendor saying, oh, we optimized the vector database retrieval speed.
Which means nothing to the CEO.
Exactly. They need to say, we reduced the time it takes for your customer to find a product on your website by 15%.
And this raises an important question for you, the listener.
Yeah.
If your highly paid vendor cannot explain their progress simply and directly, do they actually understand your business model?
That is a great question.
Because a valuable partner doesn't just execute a checklist of technical tasks in a vacuum.
They act as a translator.
Exactly. They help the business understand the progress being made, and crucially, they articulate the remaining risks in terms the executive team can actually use to make decisions.
And speaking of those risks, the guide emphasizes that you shouldn't just take a vendor's word that their AI implementation is robust and reliable.
You definitely shouldn't.
Right. It specifically cites the necessity of grounding this work in credible external standards.
Like the NIST AI Risk Management Framework.
Exactly. The NIST framework.
The National Institute of Standards and Technology framework is basically a vital shield for an executive.
A shield? How so?
Well, when a vendor makes a massive claim about the reliability or the security of their, you know, custom algorithm.
Like, trust us, it's totally safe.
Right. An executive can point to the NIST framework and ask to see the actual risk mapping.
Oh, brilliant.
It forces the vendor to prove their work against a rigorous federal standard.
So they can't just make it up.
Exactly. It provides an objective yardstick to evaluate things like system transparency, robustness against data poisoning, and just overall reliability.
It removes the vendor's proprietary opinion entirely from the equation.
And replaces it with an external, verifiable standard.
That is so smart. And to ensure all this rigorous work actually survives long term, the guide stresses the need for simple living documentation.
Living documentation, yes.
We aren't talking about a 100-page manual that gets shoved into some shared digital folder and never read again.
No, nobody reads those.
We are talking about practical, everyday tools.
Mm-hmm.
A quick reference checklist, a 1-page summary of the architecture, a verification log.
Something accessible.
Right. You keep a running record of the baseline state, the key decisions that were made, the legacy systems that are involved, and the scheduled date for the next performance review.
And the overarching goal of that documentation is continuity.
Continuity.
Yeah, because 6 months from now, when a new team member joins or a different department head takes over,
which is inevitable.
Right. They need to be able to look at that verification log and instantly understand what was built and why.
They shouldn't have to restart the entire discovery and baselining process from scratch.
No, that's incredibly expensive just to figure out how the AI connects to the CRM.
Exactly. So, to synthesize everything we've explored today.
Let's do it.
Navigating the 2026 AI landscape and choosing the right partner is clearly not just a one-and-done procurement checklist.
No, not at all.
It requires a fundamental shift in how a business operates internally. It requires establishing honest, detailed baselines before you get seduced by some synthetic demo.
You have to know where you are starting.
Right. It demands measuring actual physical outcomes, like faster resolution times and higher conversions, instead of merely tracking the activity of buying software.
Stop tracking activity.
Yes. It necessitates a tight, negotiated alignment between a business owner and a technical owner.
Right. They have to work together.
And finally, it demands plain language accountability and strict adherence to external frameworks like NIST from any vendor you bring into your ecosystem.
And, you know, the ultimate takeaway from the Technician Guide is that the strongest signal of success in this space is not absolute perfection.
Because perfection is impossible.
Exactly. Perfection is an illusion in enterprise technology. The goal is controlled, measurable progress.
Controlled progress. I like that.
If your team can stand up in a quarterly meeting and clearly explain what changed in the workflow, why it was changed, how the new AI integration was actually verified, and what the next strategic step is.
They have won.
You have won. You have successfully turned an abstract, highly risky concept into a managed, highly reliable business capability.
Wow.
A consulting partner's true role is really to help connect those strategic dots so the work becomes a living, adaptable operating plan.
That is a fantastic way to look at it. But, you know, I want to leave you, the listener, with a final thought to mull over as you prepare for your next strategic planning session.
Okay, what is it?
We've talked extensively today about standardizing ownership, defining internal roles, and creating these repeatable operating habits to basically control your AI vendor.
Yes, we have.
But think about the rapid trajectory of this technology right now.
It's moving incredibly fast.
Right. So if this entire process is all about creating repeatable habits, what happens when the AI becomes advanced enough to simply automate the very workflow management and vendor oversight you just spent all this time optimizing?
Oh, wow.
Right. Does your carefully chosen AI consultant become your permanent ongoing co-pilot, just constantly adapting alongside your business forever?
Or
is a truly great consulting partner actually one who builds a system so perfectly aligned and self-sustaining that they eventually make themselves completely obsolete?
That tension between creating permanent reliance and honestly engineering your own obsolescence,
yeah,
that is the defining challenge of consulting in this era.
Definitely something to think about before you sign that next vendor contract. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive.
It's been great.
We hope you take these insights, look past those shiny demos, and demand real plain language accountability the next time you navigate an AI integration. Keep questioning the baseline, and we will catch you next time.